approve the year up to 2016. Starting with two advisors.
Thank you.
And this is please sit down if you feel comfortable.
Thank you. Is this too normal? Do I do?
No, it's all good.
Oh, you can hear me, okay. Firstly, good afternoon, commissioners, and I'm not sure how I should address you, but.
Commissioners is good.
Commissioners is good. Thank you for your time to hear me. My name is David Barton from True Advisors Limited, and I first lived in Wanaka in 1983, and since then I've been coming back on frequent occasions and do own property in the town and have very much a spiritual connection with the town and the area. My further submission was 1053, and that is in opposition to the original submission 583, which has been submitted by Glenview Trustees Limited. I oppose all submission points covered by 583. I fully support the submissions and evidence provided by further submission 1034, Upper Cleveland Environmental Society, Julian Howarth and their experts, Dean Lucas and others. As well, I fully support the submissions and evidence provided by further submission 1094, John May and his experts, Andrew William Craig and Graham Rutherford Taylor. I have also reviewed the following documents and fully support their position regarding the O&L character of the area. That includes peer review of landscape assessment, outstanding natural landscape of the Upper Clutha part of the Queenstown Lakes District by Anne Stevens, dated June 2014, Marion Reed's evidence, dated March 17, 2017, Marion Reed's rebuttal evidence, dated May 5, 2017, and Marion Reed's summary evidence, dated May 15, 2017. The evidence provided by Graham Rutherford Taylor, dated April 4, 2017, encapsulates many of the individual points I wish to make, and I ask you to carefully read his evidence. It is my opinion that the development of Parkins Bay should be undertaken in accordance with the restrictive requirements of the Environment Court decision 2012. Any additional development should be assessed under the provisions of the rural zone and the comprehensive protection requirements of the O&L under these proposed planning provisions. On a slightly different note, the current Resource Legislation Amendment Bill allows for environmental and economic considerations to be given equal weight. The economic benefit may only be short-term, but environment is forever. Economic benefit from tourism is derived from our outstanding natural landscapes. If we don't protect these outstanding natural landscapes using the proposed plan provisions, there will be no economic benefits. In other words, pure New Zealand will no longer be true. Your responsibility as commissioners should be to ensure that does not happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barton. I just wanted to alert you to two things, by way of background. The first is the Resource Legislation Amendment Bill has now been passed. We read our legislation, point one. Second point, it doesn't apply to this process.
Right. Yes, I agree, it doesn't apply to this process.
The point being that our job is to consider the application of the RMA as if that had never been passed under the transitional rules.
Right, okay. So I guess the only point I would make is that if this submission was completely opposed and therefore the submission from 583 was therefore rejected, there would come a point in time where they could then reapply under the new RMA, which and the requirements, not requirements, but the policies and procedures of under the new RMA that we just talked about, which is now law, are a lot more I believe are more unrestricted in terms of development from the point of view of two aspects. One is the equal weight given to economic and environmental concerns, and number two the notification process is a lot less, and in which case, in this case, they would not need, if they were reapplying under the new RMA, they would not need to notify, publicly notify. So I do think that the teeth within the new RMA are not as strong as they are within the current environment, within this proposed plan. I've made sense there. I think I'll give myself, perhaps wasn't as articulate in that, but hopefully you've got you've understood my point there.
Yeah. I suppose the obvious response is that we can only decide on the Act the responsibilities that the Act places on us, and decisions will have to be made under the amended legislation in the future. That's, as regards the notification provision, the key difference for notification is related to submissions. So, it wouldn't apply to it. I'm not aware that it would make a material difference to resource consent applications, could be wrong. One of the benefits of not applying is that I haven't had to bend my mind to what it says. The second thing is that I think that the point you're talking about, equal emphasis on economic and environmental matters, may have gone. I know it was mooted, but I think it may not have been as active as it was passed. But ultimately, our position is we don't. It doesn't apply to us, and I suppose the message is, well, what happens tomorrow will have to be sorted out tomorrow.
Right, okay, that's it.
And the other thing that I need to alert you to is that last week when Glenda Bay trustees were heard, they materially shifted their position and tabled revised payment provisions. I'll wait for the hour to sit down and say they get the message. What I was saying was that last week when Glen Dubay trustees were heard, they tabled amendment payment provisions that significantly altered their position. We had a discussion on the basis on which they might be allowed to put those amendment provisions on. And I issued a minute this morning in your email, the important element of which is that because the Glen Dubay trustees dropped these amended provisions so late, the further spinners on the Glen Dubay trustees' submission, which is yourself, UCES, May, and Mr. Williams, have until 5 o'clock Wednesday week. Should you wish to make any additional comment or evidence on the extra stuff, or the amended position as set out in Mr. Ferguson's evidence and indeed an amended brief of Ms. Blurkick. So you may not want to take that up, you may want to talk to Mr. Howard about that, but be aware that option is open to you.
Well, that's good. I was reading that on my phone this morning, and I was trying to. I couldn't access my laptop to see whether those new provisions had actually. I presume they're on the website now.
I would assume that too. Mr. Ferguson's supplementary brief that you filed last week.
Yes, it should be there.
Good answer.
Because I've sent you a lot of information here, but I don't know if I've got the printed off.
So the thing to look for is Chris Ferguson's supplementary brief of evidence, because attached to it is an amended set of plan provisions. And as I say, you have a week and 2 days to file any additional comments.
May I ask what would be the biggest change that they've made?
They've reduced, I can't give you advice, but the guts of it is that they have inserted more controls in an endeavour to meet the concerns that Mr. Barr had expressed in his planning report. Now, you have to read them and decide whether they've gone far enough. And, but all I'm doing is alerting you to the fact that that window is open to you. Now, I didn't have any questions for your presentation, Commissioner Hudson.
No, you're clear, Commissioner.
Oh, thank you, yeah.
Commissioner McLeod?
All good, thank you.
We're all good.
Good, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much for attending, Mr. Barton. We appreciate it.
So for Mr. Williams, which is 1149, is it 1194?
Good question.
I think it's
1149.
1149. Supports what I've said and given in my evidence or in my submission. Which is basically backing up everything, you know, our support of Julian and the Upcliffe Environmental Society and John May and his evidence as well.
Thank you, Vera. How's that?
Thank you.
Sebastian Wellington. I have lived in Wanaka for 19 years. I have a degree in geography and have been interested in the district plan since I encountered it 17 years ago. I have a general interest in planning in our community and make submissions on resource consent applications both personally and on behalf of the Upcliffe Tax Trust. I believe that I have a reasonable understanding of the district plan and the RMA. My submission to the proposed district plan covered public access, open space zones, Wanaka urban growth boundary, and rural residential lifestyle zones in the Upper Clutha Basin, and is on the issue of the provision of rural residential lifestyle zones that I wish to speak to the hearings panel. And just as a point of clarity, my submission, original submission, got missed when the hearing stream was created so that I didn't get the chance to submit evidence in advance.
Like I was going to say, Mr. Wellington, we're grateful for you basically stepping up to the breach and enabling us to get a proper understanding of your submission, and I'm sure Mr. Barr will tell us what he thinks in the fullness of time when Council will apply.
Thank you. So my submission looked at the provision of rural residential and lifestyle zoning in the Wakatipu Basin in comparison to the Upper Clutha Basin. I noted that there appeared to be substantially more land in the Wakatipu Basin that had this zoning than in the Upper Clutha Basin. This is more pronounced when you consider the relative size of the valley floors. The most obvious difference, though, is the relative amounts of this zoning close to Queenstown and Wanaka, the settlements. It is noted that there are pockets of these zones in the Upper Clutha Basin, but their distribution seems to be related to the outcome of the plan before last, not the operative district plan. I would argue that generally they do not seem to have been selected on a basis of the landscape's ability to absorb that development. A large pocket of this zoning is at Harwea Flat. This is a settlement that has grown substantially over the last 20 years, and it could be argued that it now has a more approaching a low-density urban zone than being rural in character. It is certainly considered a settlement in the basin. I know that there is very little change in the area of land proposed to be zoned rural residential lifestyle in the Upper Clutha Basin between the existing operative district plan, as evidenced in map 8 of that, and the proposed district plan, as evidenced in map 18. It is further noted that the amount of land proposed to be zoned rural residential lifestyle in the Wakatipu Basin has increased quite substantially from the operative plan. This is especially the case in land adjacent to the Shotover River, upstream from State Highway 6, but also along Speargrass Flat Road. And again, I refer to map 13 of the existing district plan and map 13 of the proposed district plan. The proposed new zone in these areas seems to have been acceptance that the rural general zone has already been so developed in these areas that the new zoning is more reflective, or proposed new zoning is more reflective of the actual pattern of development that now exists rather than the original zone standards. The issue of subdivision and development in the rural zones, especially in the Wakatipu Basin, but also in the Upper Clutha Basin, have been a major area of conflict within the planning process. One of the issues would seem to be an apparent inability to effectively, or at least consistently, address cumulative effects of individual subdivisions. To address the cumulative effects issue as part of the current district plan review, Council commissioned the Wakatipu Basin Land Use Planning Study. This was published in March 2017 and advocates an 80 hectare minimum lot size for most of the rural zone in the Wakatipu Basin. In what it proposes as a new zone, the Wakatipu Basin Rural Community Zone. At the same time, the study advocates that the areas of the proposed Wakatipu Basin Rural Community Zone be overlaid as Wakatipu Basin Lifestyle Precinct. These precinct areas will permit considerably more development in the parts of the rural zone that are currently zoned rural lifestyle or just rural zone. Whilst the weight that will be given to this report is yet to be decided, its findings make a very interesting reading in terms of how further rural development may or may not be appropriate in the Wakatipu Basin. The report states that this should only be applied to the Wakatipu Basin due to the extreme development pressures in that this area has experienced and continues to experience. The irony of this is that the report has been required due to a perception that the existing plan has not adequately protected the rural environment in the Wakatipu Basin. Therefore, surely, it should follow that if this report is to be accepted and incorporated into the district plan, then the mechanism that is best to preserve the already potentially compromised Wakatipu Basin should also be the mechanism used to protect the Upper Clutha Basin. I would argue that very similar pressures are felt in the Upper Clutha Basin in respect to rural subdivision and development. It is vital that an Upper Clutha Basin land use planning study be undertaken to identify the areas of the basin that have the ability to absorb development, whilst at the same time protecting from ad hoc development the areas that are less suitable. In the Upper Clutha, we have an opportunity to learn from the negative experiences and outcomes in the Wakatipu Basin and hopefully avoid them. I would suggest that the pressure to develop rural lifestyle and rural residential properties in the Upper Clutha Basin is only going to increase. There has already been substantial publicity around high-profile rural land purchases in the basin, and demand for these will put further pressure on the rural zone. Anecdotally, a proposed development currently under appeal to the Environment Court had 50% of its sections under contract at the time that consent was sought. This shows there is a pent-up demand for these type of properties that is not being met. I note that in his report on submissions, Craig Barber generally recommended that the rural general land not be rezoned to rural residential lifestyle, on the basis the assessment matters on development in the rural general zone allows the council more control on the type and conditions of development that takes place. This seems to be a very logical position in general, but when examining the context of the Wakatipu Basin and the need to produce the Wakatipu Basin land use planning study, it has clearly not worked in a way that has protected the landscape. In the absence of an Upper Clifford Basin land use planning study, it would seem a better solution would be to identify areas that do have the ability to absorb some development and zone them accordingly as either rural residential or rural lifestyle. This gives a clear indication where the development could proceed, whilst at the same time strengthening the ability to decline development in areas less able to absorb that development. This then brings me back to the detail of my original submission, where I stated that the obvious place for land to be rezoned to rural residential lifestyle is to the east of the Wanaka urban growth boundary. This is because the land to the west of that boundary in the township is predominantly outstanding natural landscapes, while that to the east is mostly visual amenity landscape under the existing operative district plan. The location relatively close to the urban growth boundary would provide a transition zone from the wider open rural landscapes to rural living landscapes before becoming urban. This is an expected transition that is seen in many settlements. This would also reflect the facts on the ground that the average size of land parcels in the area increase in size as you move away from that urban growth boundary. In specific, I believe the land to the east of the Cadrona River from Mount Barker Road to State Highway 6 and extending to the east as far as Boundary Road, Morris Road, has areas that have the ability to absorb development of a rural lifestyle residential density. And indeed, parts of this area already show some of these characteristics. To date, there has been a desire to use the Cadrona River as the boundary for the urban development of Wanaka, and this has wide support. However, I believe that this boundary is not appropriate for an abrupt transition from urban development to a fully rural environment. I would argue that trying to achieve that ignores the existing development that has already taken place in this area, especially along Forks Road. In summary, I believe that the council has failed to provide any new rural residential lifestyle zoning in the Upper Clifford Basin as part of the district plan review. As a result, it has failed to consider how best to protect the landscape values of the rural areas of the Upper Clifford Basin, whilst at the same time making some provision for the demand for rural living options. The best result would be to commission an Upper Clifford Basin land use planning report, similar to the one that's been prepared for the Waka Tipu. In the meantime, I believe that there is a clear need for some land near to the Wanaka Township to be rezoned to allow for rural living, and suggest that the area identified above is the most suitable.
Thank you, Mr. Wellington. First of all, calling a spade, anecdotally, a proposed development, where are we talking about?
Valentine Road. If you want to know it, it's Valentine Barker. Say that the role of those zones would be to provide the ability for people to live in a rural environment, but in such an area that the impacts on the openness and the character of that open landscape is minimised. So it's to provide the opportunity for people to live in a rural environment without compromising the overall landscape, and there are areas that have higher ability to absorb development due to topography than others.
And one of the things that, one of the conundrums that we've got is that the evidence we've heard is you don't let it in the zone land rural residential if you want to retain any rural amenity. That's point one. And secondly, that rural lifestyle rezoning is hugely wasteful of land, valuable production land, or potentially valuable production land. So what's the answer to the conundrum?
That's a difficult one. My immediate thought to that is that the way the district plan has been interpreted is that rural subdivisions have generally been the 5 hectare mark, 10 acres, 10-15 acres. That's a holdover from the previous district plan. And that is probably more wasteful of productive land than the rural lifestyle, which has a 2 hectare average and a 1 hectare minimum. You are right in that the rural residential does effectively reduce the rural feel of the, it doesn't have the same rural amenity that the general rural area was, but it provides, especially if it's clustered, and that effectively could be clustered, a group of 1 acre sites in a compact and an area that is unobtrusive, provides the ability to live surrounded by open rural landscape and the perception of rural living if it's not actually pure rural living. So I think probably of the two, rural residential, it will be the preferred option as the Wapitigi Basin study would suggest. That's less wasteful of productive land, gives the ability for people not to live in an urban environment, but in a rural environment, but those areas do have to be selected carefully so that they don't have an adverse impact on the surrounding areas.
And I suppose the example you've given of hardly a flat, could you consider that a failure in that terms because you're hurtling towards, as you put it, a small settlement?
In the long term, that's probably not true because this is how settlements do evolve. Given the amount of land that's actually zoned as that in that location, I think the danger is that you have zonings like this, like on the face of the Criffel, that is very visually obtrusive. And as that gets more developed, I think that would have a far bigger impact than in the community of Harwood Flat does. But potentially, yes, in theory, it could be considered a failure.
And when you talk about zoning on the Creeper View, just to be clear, I think you're talking about the land on the Cadrona Valley side of Mount Barker.
On the face of the Cripple, on the southern side of that area, yes. On the southern side of Mount Barker Road, there's I think it's rural residential zone land that goes quite high up the face of that. Leaving town on Wanaka, on leaving down Valentine Road at night, that little constellation of stars halfway up the face of the cliff.
Fair to say we didn't know its existence as we were doing our cycles. And the other question I had for you was something you haven't dealt with today. It was in your written submission. You were talking about using Riverbank Road as the future urban boundary.
Yeah.
Could you expand on that? How do you think that should work?
It worked on the basis to mainly looking down from the bird's eye view of the development of Wanaka. That boundary has been set up to Orchard Road as the boundary. It made sense to continue it up to the entrance of the Cadrona Valley, given that that land is now subject to subdivision in a sort of clustered type of development. I believe that's short-term decision to do it on that basis, and it would have been far better to actually bite the bullet and rezone that low density residential. From day one, it would be far more efficient in terms of land in the long term to provide. What would happen is that land would be subdivided and subdivided again over the due time, and all the facilities that need to be in there, the servicing has not been done when it should have been done. So that was part, to me, it was a contained area. As you come out of the Cadroma Valley, you're leaving the rural area, you're coming into the outskirts of Monaco, and that seemed to be the obvious place for that boundary to go.
And I suppose that this is a bit completely simple, no more words in the mouth, but it is your own thesis that if you're going to stop that ad hoc, may creep, then decide, well, that's wasteful, we need to subdivide it, intensify it, and maybe be constrained by where the house has been put. We need an overall structure plan. In effect, before you do anything.
In the rural areas, I think that's, but well, that effectively is what, from my understanding, is what the Rockatinga Basin study has done. It's looked at that whole basin and said, we need an overall structure of where is potentially able to be developed and where we need to protect it more. So yes, in terms of rural development, I believe that is a, particularly in an area under the pressure that both the Rockatinga Basin and the Upper Clutha Basin is under in terms of rural development, some more guidance in terms of that zoning, it would be appropriate. Which is why I believe it's vital that we do commission an Upper Clutha Basin land use planning study, and not just one for what we're doing.
One obvious point is we don't have the commercial power to do that. We can recommend that to the council. Commissioner Hudson.
I don't even think we listen. The answer to the question on here.
I'm going to cover some of these, and we've got such an esteemed witness. The 2020 process, you were here for that?
I was.
Without solidifying my opinion, an opinion that could have been taken from that was that we looked at an urban growth boundary, and by setting the two rivers, basically set in process a land grab by developers for the areas inside that process. So if we did go down the avenue of the structure plan, does that not then initiate second great land grab?
I don't think it necessarily has to, but certainly it will advantage and disadvantage different landowners. In terms of the Monaco 2020, we were looking purely at an urban growth boundary, and I think everybody supports that. What we're talking about here is a rural transition zone, or whether what is appropriate in the rural zones, and there will be rural development. There will be continually people trying to subdivide and develop rural land. What we need to do is how we deal with. Do we look at the area and say, well, this has potential and this clearly doesn't, and set up rules and regulations that make it very, very clear what can and can't be developed.
And what brings on to the next point, when you said that's how, with reference to the chair's point about how we apply, that's just evolved that way. There's a question that I have is that just because something does evolve, does it necessarily mean it should evolve that way?
No, but that is the factor of life. Life happens when you're not expecting it. I think once you have created that zoning, then it's such a flat open area that allowed for that growth to happen. If that zoning is contained by geographical features or discrete areas, that would potentially limit that unplanned development.
And I'll cast you to Hawea, to the development that's going on there, and you've got Cemetery Road.
Yep.
And the one that goes directly to the lake.
You know?
New Road?
Waterbank Road.
The main road.
On the other side.
New Road, yeah, wasn't it?
And is that somewhere at the bottom? What's happening in Monaco?
There's a corner at the bottom that's currently being applied to be processed under the DDP to look at changing the zoning of that. And that originally was, and I think it was rural lifestyle, not 100%, but it was almost like it fell into a holding pattern, which now ended up with quite a messy situation. So if you actually looked, and again, this is not exposing an opinion, it's just examining options, but it's almost at the stage that if you do go down the rural lifestyle, rural residential, you're almost saying, well, that'll be urban eventually, so we're going to lose it now.
In the Hardwick case where you haven't set a fixed urban growth boundary, that is always a possibility. It's the same thing that's happened effectively with the Orchard Road triangle between Riverbank Road, Orchard Road, and that. And that's why I'm saying I think that was a poor planning decision to allow that to be subdivided to the way it is. A long-term view should have been taken that that was where urban growth should go, not. So if in conjunction with an effective urban growth boundary, that shouldn't be a problem. But if you don't have an urban growth boundary, then yes, there is always that potential risk of creep.
And following on from that, would it then be, again, an option to possibly even look at those zones and zone them initially for full occupation and hold back? You know what I mean?
I think the speed of development in the Upper Clutha Basin in the last 10 years has caught everybody, particularly the planners, by surprise. And you just need to look at the 1600 section Northlake, and that growth is spilling over into Harweir. So I don't think anyone could have predicted the amount of growth. This gives us the opportunity to think about those issues and try and address them now rather than have those issues continue to happen the way that they have done in the last 10 years, particularly in the case that you're talking about in Harweir.
Can I ask about one first? Wonder whether if you put rural residential or rural lifestyle hard on the other side of your urban growth boundary, no matter how clear your rules, eventually it's always going to creep. And the only way you're going to make that work is if there's a clear separation between your urban growth boundary and your rural living areas.
Yes, I can see that there is an argument for that, yes. Having said that, that is the nature over time of how supplements do to grow.
Yes, so helps have a river of the way.
Yes.
Mr. Wellington, just going back to your original submission, and you were talking about public access. And that there are circumstances where provisions of public access as part of a proposed development could be considered a positive effect. And as you may well know, there have been some submissions from landowners seeking just that, the right to rezone land for development in exchange for public access over remaining land. Sounds to that, including of course the Green Bay, which was in the book, we're going to submit this information to that tomorrow. And also, we have people now on their farms regarding Mount Iron. Now, especially with respect to Mount Iron, I'd be interested in your views if you're familiar with the issues and how you see this. Is there a balance? Is there a point at which you say, well, the public benefit is or is not outweighed by the proposed development, and the other factors have to be taken into account? I'm just interested in your views.
Sure. I'm a little conflicted on that answer because I wear two hats. I'm interested in terms of conservation of the landscape, but I'm also a member of the Upper Clutha Tracts Trust. Mm-hmm. And I make a lot of submissions on the basis of when resource consent applications are made, I look at potential access that could be granted. And then it's a mechanism to persuade the landowner to grant that access if they think that they can have positive impacts and help assist their application through. I think very clearly there is a balance where the access, public access that can be gained from development is important. But it shouldn't be the sole issue. The landscape issues are also very, very important. So it's getting, you're right, there is a balance. Where you draw that line is a very individual thing. In terms of the Parkings Bay, a lot of the access that came out of that resource consent was as a result of the River Tracks Trust appealing the decision, that we thought that the access offered was very minimal compared to what was actually could potentiate from that development. It is a balancing issue. It's something that the Trust doesn't do very often, or very lightly, but there was quite a strong view on that particular case.
Well, you know, I can't really ask you to give an answer on those specific matters as such, because we didn't have a submission on it, but you did seek, you noted that you were getting policy proposed. Where you talk about ensuring that planning and development maximises opportunities to create safe and healthy communities through subdivision of building design, and then that ensure council-leading private design and development of public spaces and built development maximises the opportunity for recreational community walking and cycling, and to see that shown here is more scope for creation of functional, well, interconnected network of tracks and cycling routes. So, how do you see that play out? You talked about particular instances.
How I see that playing out, when the Trust was making submissions in terms of resource consents and planning issues, we would say there is a good opportunity here to link this subdivision with the other one. You often get cul-de-sac subdivisions that don't interconnect because they're done piecemeal. And the Trust would suggest that when those subdivisions are done, there should be some look at future linkages between them, even if it's only for foot and cycle use. And that was raised with the council and its planners at the time of the Civic Court, who said there was nothing in the district plan that requires us to do that. So this was what we were trying to get into the plan. So we look at the holistic links within the community where individual subdivisions are done, particularly in an urban environment. And I'm still not convinced that we're doing that effectively.
So just taking a little further, does the proposed plan still not have that tool available?
Right.
Where you've got individual subdivisions and
I'm not clear on the answer to that. I'm sorry. I do need to look at that. I'm not sure if that stream has been heard yet.
Sure.
If it hasn't, I do need to make sure that I'm involved in that conversation.
Too late.
Too late has been heard, is it?
Yes. Okay. Subversion has been heard. One last thought was if you did. We did go ahead with an approval basis study. Is that council's job, or should that be independent?
Well, council commissioned an independent body to do the what did we base it on, and I believe the same principle should be applied over here.
Did you get that on record?
Only if I keep writing it down. Thank you very much, Mr. Nelson. Your contribution is much appreciated.
Thank you.
Here are you to observe to help.
I was going to heckle, so. Yeah, I'm just watching. Yeah. But it's very interesting.
Well, in that case, we'll adjourn until 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.